The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The United Nations Commission on Narcotic Drugs held its 68th session in Vienna, Austria, March 10th through 14th. In addition to CND's plenary sessions and meetings as a committee of the whole, a number of side events took place, organized by member nations, UN agencies, and civil society organizations. Over the next few weeks, we'll hear highlights from some of those side events. For this week's show, we start with a side event from the first day of the session, March 10th. Entitled A Rights-Based Approach to Health and HIV, Protecting Rights and Ensuring Continuity of Care for People in Prison and After Release, this side event was organized by the European Union with the support of UNAIDS, the UNODC HIV-AIDS section, the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights, and NGOs Penal Reform International and the Group of Friends of HIV Prevention Among People Who Use Drugs and People in Prison Settings. Opening remarks were delivered by His Excellency Karl Hallegard, EU Ambassador to the International Organizations in Vienna.
You would think the prisons is the one place where you can control things, but it's not the case. So I think this is maybe the message. And also what strikes me when I read my own notes and I listen is that this is really a problem for all of us. And you will see also in the European Union, we have work to do. We have long recognized in the European Union that addressing health in prison settings is not only a public health priority, but also a human rights obligation. People in prison face disproportionately high rates of infectious diseases, including HIV, viral hepatitis, and tuberculosis. Their right to health care is enshrined in the international standards, such as the Nelson Mandela rules, you mentioned it, Oliver, and the Bangkok rules. However, we know that these standards are often not met, as access to essential health services in many prison systems falls far below community healthcare standards. People who use drugs and other key populations are overrepresented in prison, and incarceration often exacerbates their vulnerability. Harm reduction approaches are one of the core pillars of public health and human rights-based interventions, ensuring that individuals in detention can access the same life-saving services available in the broader community. Interventions such as opioid agonist therapy, needle and syringe programs, and overdose prevention and management are among the most effective ways to reduce HIV and hepatitis C transmission, prevent overdoses, and improve overall health and well-being. However, their implementation in prison settings remains inconsistent across Europe and the wider world. According to the European Drug Report 2024, while opioid agonist therapy is available in most EU member states, access remains limited, particularly for people who are incarcerated. Only a few European countries offer needle and syringe programs in prisons, despite overwhelming evidence of their effectiveness. Take-home naloxone, a crucial tool for overdose prevention, is available in just 16 EU countries, and its availability in prison settings remains even more limited. These gaps highlight the urgent need to scale up evidence-based harm reduction services in prisons. The European Union is committed to supporting comprehensive approaches that integrate prison health into broader public health strategies. The European Union Drug Strategy 21-25 explicitly recognizes the need for comprehensive health care in prison settings, including harm reduction, overdose prevention, and mental health services. Strategic Priority 8 of the strategy calls for ensuring that people in prisons have equitable access to health care, including harm reduction interventions, to mitigate the adverse health consequences associated with drug use. Ensuring continuity of care during and after incarceration is just as crucial. The transition from prison back into the community is a period of heightened risk, including fatal overdose, disease progression, and social exclusion. Without strong linkages between prison health services and community health care, many individuals are left behind. Civil society organizations and peer-led initiatives play a vital role in providing support, treatment, referrals, and reintegration services that reduce harm and improve long-term outcomes. The European Union remains committed to advancing public health-based responses to drug use, both within and outside of prison walls. Our work aligns with the global commitment to end AIDS eliminate viral hepatitis, and ensure universal health coverage for all, including people in prison. In this effort, we recognize the critical role of UNODC in supporting evidence-based health interventions in prisons, promoting international standards, and working with member states to improve healthcare access and continuity of care for incarcerated populations.
That was His Excellency Karl Hallegard, EU Ambassador to the International Organizations in Vienna, delivering opening remarks at a side event entitled A Rights-Based Approach to Health and HIV, Protecting Rights and Ensuring Continuity of Care for People in Prison and After Release. Let's hear more from that panel. Miriam Mabe is with the South African Department of Correctional Services.
The presentation is on ensuring continuity of care for people in prisons, developing and sustaining linkages between prison health and public health service to ensure continuity of care during and after incarceration. The presentation outline will be looking into four areas: background mandates, inmate case flow, and the conclusion. South Africa is having 243 correctional facilities with 46 management areas in six provinces that we call regions. And the inmate population is made up of 3% female and 97% male, with 71 infants that are there with their incarcerated mother. They are not incarcerated. They are there for bonding with their mothers. In terms of background, South Africa provides a comprehensive primary health care service package, which is provided by healthcare professionals, and all diseases are managed according to the Department of Health policies, guidelines, and clinical protocols. And the services provided to inmates are not discriminatory and are offered at the standard and equivalent to those provided in the country. There are 243 clinics, because there's a clinic in each and every correctional center. There are 227 food service units for their nutritional basis, with 37 pharmacies in the correctional center. And patients in need of a level that is not primary health care are referred to the Department of Health in the country. There are different mandates that that guide the services that we provide, with emphasis on primary health care in the prisons and referral of patients to ensure that all common and minor ailments are treated at the lowest level and referred to other levels in the Department of Health in the whole country. We are also guided by the National Health Act and its prescripts, as well as the referral policy for South African health services and implementation, which guides the referral policy and aims at ensuring a closer relationship between all levels of the health system. And it also assists in making cost-effective use of hospital and primary health care services. We utilize the primary health care standard treatment guidelines and essential medicine list. It has been revised. It is for 2020, and it guides all the referral systems, also guides all the treatment that must be provided. In terms of the inmate case flow, on entry, inmates are screened for various diseases as well as for drug use, and we continue with testing for various programs and the treatment. For an example, HIV and AIDS and TB are some of those programs, inclusive of mental health care services. And we link all that are supposed to be linked to other levels of care, and as well as for reintegration into the community on end of sentence. The healthcare services that is provided covers a range of diseases and programs, like I said, and there are also diagnostic monitoring system through the National Health Laboratory Service in the country. And we also have the lab track for tracking the results, as well as tracking other laboratory services. And for quick access to the laboratory systems, there's efficiency in diagnosis, treatment, planning, so that we can give them the relevant treatment according to their diagnosis. Like I said, the provision of care, it's in, on a comprehensive approach, and all cases that require secondary level are referred, and medicines are prescribed for a continuous period of not less than 3 months at secondary and tertiary levels. So those that are given treatment at that level will continue with that treatment in the correctional centers. And for the pharmacies that are in the correctional centers, we also provide treatment for those in need through pharmaceutical services. With linkage to care in the HIV program, there's testing services as well as preventive services for those that are exposed to risk in terms of pre-exposure prophylaxis and post-exposure prophylaxis, as well as antiretroviral provision. This slide shows the different national strategic plans that we utilize, as well as the national guidelines and the clinical guidelines for different programs and for different diseases. Upon release, the patients are given treatment for continuity. So those with acute ailments will be given their treatment because it will be usually for 5 days. And those that are transferred from one correctional center to the other takes their treatment along for continuity of care. And those that are having medication up to schedule 4 and they are released will be given a month supply. If that is mainly for the control of those medication so that they are not misused. And those that are on schedule 6 and 7 medication will be given only a 7-day supply until they go to the nearest clinic for continuity of care. In conclusion, primary health care is the cornerstone of the health service in South Africa, and it must be accessed at the level, lowest level possible. That's why we're providing that care in the correctional centers and refer all those are in need of specialized care. And a stronger enforcement of referral system is necessary. It requires monitoring of healthcare provider practices, particularly in relation to the use of treatment protocols and clinical guidelines for key diagnosis and referral patterns, and for avoidance of misuse of medication. Thank you.
That was Miriam Mabe with the South African Department of Correctional Services delivering a presentation at a side event entitled A Rights-Based Approach to Health and HIV, Protecting Rights and Ensuring Continuity of Care for People in Prison and After Release, which was organized by the European Union and held March 10th as a side event during the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs. We'll hear more in a moment. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Another presenter on this panel was Cesar Bonamigo, Minister Counselor at the Brazilian Embassy in Austria and Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations in Vienna.
Thanks so much, Oliver. And I express my gratitude to the European Union and co-sponsors for organizing this event and for fostering discussion on public health and human rights, which is something we can do freely in our side events, but sometimes there's a challenge to do it in our resolutions, for example. I would like to highlight the importance of global cooperation in promoting access to health care for incarcerated individuals, ensuring that no one's left behind, and in the global response to HIV, viral hepatitis, tuberculosis, and other infectious diseases. I think the reason why I am in this panel today is because we have a group of friends dealing precisely with these themes here, which I had the honor to preside during the last year until 2 weeks ago. It's really a succession, and even though, as it has been mentioned, it is a niche theme, we know we will not be able to finish HIV if we don't finish them in the prisons. So prison health is public health. Yeah. We have globally 13.9 million people who inject drugs in the world, and 1.5 million are living with HIV. In 2022, 11.5 million people were in prison a 1.6% increase with relation to the previous years. So with overcrowding remaining a critical issue, 6% of countries report prisons operate above their capacity. This situation in Brazil is not different. So Brazil has one of the largest populations in prison in the world, often with overcrowding and with limited access to healthcare. The HIV prevalence in Brazilian prisons is six times higher than in the general populations. 1.3 of all incarcerated individuals have an infection. Recognizing this challenge, Brazil has implemented major national initiatives to improve health in prisons. I must mention particularly the National Policy on Comprehensive Healthcare for People Deprived of Liberty, which has a PNAESP, it's a strange name in Portuguese, that healthcare services in prisons, it ensures that health care services in prisons shall align with those available for the general community. Another related policy on that matter is the Fair Penalty Plan, Plano Pena Justa, launched in 2025, which addresses prison overcrowding, improves conditions, and promotes gender-sensitive interventions. The Brazil Health Program, Brasil Saudável, is a third program. It's a cross-ministerial initiative engaging 14 ministries, focusing on eliminating HIV, tuberculosis, and hepatitis among vulnerable populations, including people in prisons. So Brazil is engaged in its policies, and I would like also to highlight our close cooperation with CNODC, and especially highlight two projects. One of them, Pris Co-op, is the name of the project. It's a project which strengthens prison management in Brazil, particularly in addressing organized crime within the penitentiary system. Implemented in the National Secretariat for Prison Policies of the Ministry of Justice, he has trained 644 professionals in 11 states and classified almost 4,000 prisoners in two states, including full prison health care access, contributing to a safe and more humane prison system. So the prison system is one branch of cooperation, and the other is with a branch of HIV prevention, who in November 2024 conducted a high-level mission to Brazil, reinforcing human rights-based and gender-responsive approaches in healthcare systems. In that occasion, they carried out a workshop on HIV, tuberculosis, and STIs, organized with the Ministry of Health, bringing together health professionals, civil society, and policymakers to develop recommendations aligned to Brazil's national HIV plan. Also, they carried out a field visit to Tulipas do Cerrado, which is a collective which implements harm reduction policies. So to conclude, I would like to reaffirm Brazil's commitment to ensuring public health in prisons and promoting a rights-based approach to drug policies and prison health. To recognize that prison health is public health and emphasize Brazil's advocacy for integrated health care and justice policies that prioritize prevention, harm reduction, and access to treatment.
That was Cesar Bonamigo, Minister Counselor at the Brazilian Embassy in Austria and Deputy Permanent Representative to the United Nations in Vienna, delivering a presentation at a side event entitled A Rights-Based Approach to Health and HIV, Protecting Rights and Ensuring Continuity of Care for People in Prisons and After Release. Another presenter on this panel was Jérôme Manglenix, Global Policy Manager at Penal Reform International.
And I must say that it is with great privilege, but also urgency, that we convene here today to address the fundamental challenges surrounding community engagement, reintegration, and the provision of HIV and harm reduction services upon release. And we must acknowledge that being in prison, as has already been mentioned, being in prison does not strip individuals of their fundamental human rights, and that includes access to healthcare, as enshrined in international treaties. However, the reality remains stark, and people in prison, especially those who use drugs, face profound health disparities, limited access to harm reduction services, and significant barriers to social reintegration upon release. Despite progressive steps towards decriminalization in 66 jurisdictions across 40 countries globally, punitive drug policies persist as a primary driver of imprisonment. And these punitive approaches disproportionately impact marginalized and racialized communities with devastating consequences, particularly for women. Over one third of women in prison globally are imprisoned for drug offenses, with rates soaring to 60 to 80% in parts of Latin America and Asia. And in the same vein, the overrepresentation of people who use drugs in prison is a direct consequence of punitive drug policies, with estimates suggesting that between one third and one half of all individuals entering prison have a history of drug use. Now, it is worth noting the gendered impact of punitive drug policies, as I already mentioned, which urgently require a shift towards a more targeted approach that specifically address the needs of women and gender diverse individuals in prison. And the global surge in the imprisonment of women for drug offenses rising by 60% since 2000s. Demands urgent attention. However, the absence of gender-sensitive, trauma-informed harm reduction services tailored to women in both prisons and community settings continues to exacerbate these health disparities. Now, in Latin America and the Caribbean, where 35 to 70% of women in prison serve sentences for nonviolent drug offenses, the lack of prison-based harm reduction services reflects broader systemic failures. And speaking of systemic failures, the prison environment often exacerbates vulnerabilities and often fosters high-risk behaviors such as syringe sharing, thereby heightening the risk of HIV and other bloodborne infections. Recent data from Harm Reduction International shows that in some countries, up to 40% of individuals released from prison had used illicit drugs while in prison, with 14% injecting drugs and 30% sharing injecting equipment. Now, the consequences of these realities extend beyond prisons, with heightened mortality risks upon release as well. Especially the first few weeks upon release are particularly crucial, with individuals facing a dramatically increased risk of overdose-related deaths due to decreased tolerance. We must also consider the broader implications of inadequate services upon release, such as the lack of access to healthcare, employment, and social support structures, therefore exacerbating the cycle of recidivism. And without meaningful interventions, people released from prison often struggle to secure stable housing, employment, and healthcare, including harm reduction services. I would like also to brush upon the impact of stigma and discrimination against people who use drugs, particularly those who have been in prison, which poses a significant barrier to reintegration, and discriminatory policies prevent individuals from accessing essential services, which further marginalizes already vulnerable groups. And now to break this cycle, we must promote policies that prioritize human dignity, health, and rehabilitation over these punitive measures. Now, addressing these issues requires a fundamental shift in approach, one that prioritizes healthcare continuity, harm reduction, social reintegration, and the Nelson Mandela rules and the Bangkok rules unequivocally affirm that people in prison are entitled to the same standard of healthcare as those in the community. Yet the implementation of harm reduction services in prison settings remains woefully inadequate. And we already know that UNODC and WHO advocate for opioid agonist therapy, needle and syringe programs, naloxone distribution, yet uptake in prison settings lags significantly behind community implementation. Now, this is where the role of civil society becomes indispensable. Civil society organizations and networks, particularly those that are community-based and peer-led, play a pivotal role in bridging the gap between imprisonment and reintegration. They provide essential post-release healthcare services. They advocate for policy reforms and offer psychosocial support to individuals navigating reintegration. The EU Drug Strategy 2021-2025, for instance, underscores the need for a continuum of care approach, ensuring that individuals receive evidence-based drug services, including opioid agonist treatment during imprisonment, but also upon release. Now, this is why civil society organizations play a crucial role in improving access to healthcare in prison, including responses to HIV and harm reduction services, and ensure the continuity of care in the community. Now, in these uncertain times, active and strategic support to civil society organizations is therefore more important than ever.
That was Jerome Manglinix, Global Policy Manager at Penal Reform International, delivering a presentation at a side event entitled A Rights-Based Approach to Health and HIV, Protecting Rights and Ensuring Continuity of Care for People in Prison and After Release, which was organized by the European Union and held as a side event March 10th during the 68th session of the UN's Commission on Narcotic Drugs. We'll have more next week. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for community radio and syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.